Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dead to Rights by Heather Hildenbrand, narrated by Chelsea Stevens. Chapter 1. The male security guard glanced at my badge, frowned, and looked back at my face again. I focused on the Delta insignia sewn into his uniform and tried to look like I was supposed to be here. I'd never seen him before. Nor did a single face in this bustling lobby look familiar, but my nerves left me trembling where I stood. Level 10 demons could storm the damn place, and I'd be less terrified of fighting them than I was of making it past the turnstiles just ahead. If my racing heart put him off, the security guard didn't react. After another cursory look at my picture, he grunted, handed me back the official SSF ID card Starla had messengered over to me last night, and waved me forward. I exhaled. Not a single word had been exchanged between us, but he'd just given me the keys to the kingdom. Just like that, I'd become the thing I'd wanted to be most in the world. An SSF agent. Okay, maybe not just like that, when you consider the months of training, the whole being on the run thing, and vanquishing a bitchy Nephilim who stood in my way, but I was here. I'd made it. Feeling like a damned winner, I marched through the metal detectors that weren't so much about detecting weapons as they were spelled to strip glamours or anything magic and nefarious. I hesitated out of habit, but unlike last time, nothing happened as I crossed the barrier. Then, with an exhale of relief and a bit of gut tightening as I remembered my last visit here, I pushed my way through the turnstiles and hurried for the elevators. It was hard to believe only days had passed since sending Salafiel through a portal to hell. Okay, honestly, I had no idea where we'd sent her, but I was hoping for someplace terrible. The days since had been quiet by contrast. Too quiet. After all that time running and fighting, maybe I needed the rest. But all it had done was wind me up even tighter, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And in the meantime, that terrifying moment kept playing on a loop in my head. Jax ripping out Adric's throat. Sure, he'd done it to save me, or that's what he'd thought. But I couldn't make myself see past what he'd done. I'd woken from nightmares about it every night since. And being here now, in this place where an enemy still lurked, only set me more on edge. This wasn't over yet, but we'd made progress. At least this time when I visited the upper floors of the Delta building, otherwise known as the headquarters for the Supernatural Security Force, I would do it as a legit employee. No warrants, no Nephilim trying to kill me, just Jem Hawkins, detective, reporting for duty. The whole thing seemed so normal after everything else, though a little bittersweet. I stepped inside the elevator, crowding in with others who were mostly dressed in the SSF patrol uniform, and thought of my father, Vic Hawkins, senior detective. He'd walked these same halls every day of his career, probably knew some of the people I was currently forced to cuddle with inside the cramped space. Everything I did today, he'd already done. And now I was here, honoring his legacy, and cherishing his memory. My chest swelled and ached as I thought of him. Loneliness hit me, and I sucked in a sharp breath that pricked at my ribs. My father's death, no, murder, had set all of this in motion. But I was no longer angry about it. Too much good had happened, too. I'd found his killer, and I'd found Adric. That might have made me feel better if he'd actually called me since the other night, but so far, nothing. At first, I chalked it up to healing. Of course, Jax had done a number on him. Even with Rothseal's Nephilim healing power bringing him back, he'd been weak. Tired. He needed rest. But that was days ago. What the hell was his excuse now? The possible answers terrified me. What if he decided not to call me anymore? What if he'd changed his mind about me? I was too much of a coward to find out, and so I hadn't called him either. Finally, the elevator doors opened on the 16th floor, and half the occupants spilled out. When I finally managed to wedge free and step out into the hall, a familiar face waited for me, scowling in his trademark douchebag glare. Good morning, Rigo, I said with all of the fake sugary politeness this moment deserved.
You're late, he said flatly. Let's go.
Whoa, I'm not going anywhere with you, I said, planting my feet as the last remnants of my excitement melted away. His was not the face I wanted for my welcoming committee. He turned back, his scowl pinching his brows and mouth.
Don't start with me, Hawkins. It's too damn early for your petulance.
Petulance? I huffed. You have some fucking nerve. Listen, just because I'm a detective, despite your best efforts to the contrary, does not automatically mean I have to take orders from you.
And that's where you're wrong.
His eyes gleamed with fresh enjoyment. This dude was pure fucking douchebag professional level.
As I am the head detective for the quarter, and you've been assigned to my division, that's exactly what it means.
My jaw dropped. No fucking way. Of all the supervisors I could have been assigned, Starla had put me with Rigo, the guy who'd heard the phrase copping a feel and taken it so literally he'd gone into law enforcement. There had to be a mistake.
I need to speak to Starla, I growled. Be my guest. She's waiting for you in orientation now.
I took a deep, steadying breath that would hopefully center me enough that I wouldn't nut-punch this asshole right here in the foyer of my new workplace.
Where is that happening?
I asked through clenched teeth. He waved his arm in the direction he'd already tried leading me. The gesture was dramatic and smug as hell.
Right this way, cadet.
I rolled my eyes, cinched my bag higher on my shoulder, and followed him into my career. Rigo led me down a short hall that quickly opened up into a large, open space that made up almost half the floor. The outer walls were floor-to-ceiling glass and overlooked the city, offering a view high enough to show only the shiny parts of what awaited below. But I didn't linger too long on the view out there. It was the view inside that mattered most to me today. As the sunlight caught on chrome clipboards and swivel chairs, I stopped and stared at the sight before me. Gleaming linoleum and rows of utilitarian desks as far as the eye could see. This was it. The 16th floor. The big leagues. I'd finally made it. I inhaled, anticipating the scent of victory, but all that filled my nostrils was the stale smell of burnt coffee and a faint whiff of animal.
Are you coming, or should I ask the head of the SSF to hold your orientation meeting here in the doorway?
My gaze snapped over to where Rigo waited impatiently. Keep your panties on, I muttered, and resumed my little game of follow the pervy leader. In my head, I thought of all of the creative names Gran would call him if she were here. It hadn't been easy to make her promise to stay home today, and I knew she wouldn't stay away for long. Gran's commentary was distracting at best. At worst, she'd head right into danger alongside me, and I'd put my loved ones at risk too often lately. One day. Hopefully, she'd give me that. At the back of the room, Rigo stopped and gestured for me to enter the office where the interior view was currently obscured by closed blinds. The layout reminded me a lot of Division 13 and Harvey's smoky, stale space where he'd first welcomed me into the SSF. Except cleaner, fresher, and with slightly more violence coursing through me than before. Probably because Rigo kept looking at my chest. I ignored him and looked over at my new boss. Starla sat behind a large glass-top desk, her plum suit and charcoal heels definitely a contrasting look to Rigo's wrinkled slacks and faded polo. It might have been empowering, seeing a woman at the helm of an agency as large and important as the SSF, but Starla wasn't just a woman, and we weren't here to fight the patriarchy. No, we were up against something a hell of a lot worse, and I still wasn't entirely convinced I could trust her.
Good morning, Jem. Have a seat.
Starla gestured at a trio of chairs, one of which Milo already occupied.
Hey, partner, he said brightly.
Rigo didn't wait for his own invitation before dropping into the one closest to the door.
I took the middle spot, scooting it as far from Rigo as possible before perching tentatively against the seat. Milo held out his hand for a fist bump.
Where were you? I thought we were driving over together, I whispered, tapping my knuckles with his.
I made a friend last night, stayed in the quarter, he said with a wink. I shook my head. Was it a tradition with Milo to have a one-night stand the night before starting a new job? It was a question for later, if I dared even ask it. Maybe I didn't want to know.
Feels good to be on the inside looking out, eh? He added.
I have lots of feelings, I muttered, aiming a disdainful glare at Rigo. Not all of them good. Milo snorted, but I looked up at Starla, half hoping this was all some kind of ruse to lure Rigo to his own firing squad. But when our eyes met, Starla's smile flashed quickly and then was gone. She was all business, and none of it seemed to be about putting Rigo in his place.
Welcome to you both. I know you're anxious to get to work, but this won't take long, she began. As you're both aware, since the agency's inception, the detective branch of the SSF has operated as an elite division of justice enforcement and peacekeepers among the supernatural community, Starla said, her voice taking on a sort of historian-lecturer quality. It's both an honor and a great responsibility to be selected and promoted to the position of detective. In fact, there is no higher honor at the SSF than that of the protector. I settled into my chair, sure this was going to turn into a full history class now. Rigo already looked bored. Because we employ only the most skilled agents within the walls of this department, we take on only the most urgent and important cases, she went on, and something about her tone sharpened my attention. This was going somewhere, and with Starla, probably somewhere I wouldn't like. Does that explain why no one wanted to investigate my dad's death? I asked. It wasn't important. Starla blinked. Rigo muttered something I decided not to decipher. Jem? Milo began. I don't think that's what she... As a matter of fact... She reached over and picked up a file from her desk, holding it out to me. What's this? See for yourself. I took the file and read the name. Victor Hawkins. My gaze snapped back to Starla's. I'd like you to do the final paperwork on this one, she said. Seriously? I asked. She shrugged. You know the case better than anyone. I looked back and forth between her and Rigo. It's paperwork, he said smugly. On a closed case. Not exactly the big leagues. A closed case you couldn't solve, I pointed out, and earned myself a scowl. I looked back at Starla. Thank you for this. I took the file. And while I do appreciate it, what's the trade-off? She laughed, clearly not offended. You know me well. But her smile vanished quickly, and I noted the tension lining her expression. If I hadn't worked with her before, I might have missed the barely there worry in the line of her brow. The fact is, Salafiel's disappearance hasn't gone unnoticed, nor has the diminishing numbers of true demons. Our people know something went down, and they feel deceived. They know there's a cover-up? Milo said. Yes. Starla's expression became more strained, and I knew she was thinking about the gatherings that had taken place over the weekend. Small groups of supes who'd begun calling for an inquiry into the council's actions. It had started with some of the new recruits, the cadets most recently graduated from the TIFF, and then promptly laid off when there were suddenly no more demons to catch. But I'd heard enough chatter to know their suspicion had already spread to the general community. Supernaturals wanted answers. I couldn't blame them. I'd also done my best to avoid them. I'd worked hard to cross back to the lawful side of things, and I wasn't about to get caught up in something that would send me back the other direction. The last thing I needed was a soup who knew me as Salafiel's last meal. Or worse. Someone who'd seen my little stunt in that alley when I'd shapeshifted into the form of a Nephilim from beyond.
The protests and unrest in the community are growing more tense by the day. Now, I know you took this job because you wanted to solve cases, to protect your kind against demons. But as you know, Jem, with Salafiel gone, the demon problem is a thing of the past. There are still demons out there, the last of the monsters she summoned. Of course, and we have teams on that right now. She waved me off, but I couldn't just let her move on. What about Raguel? Do we have a team on him, too? Rigo stiffened. Interesting. He already knew about Raguel using soups to create demons. Raguel isn't your priority, Starla said. Protests that result in violence against our agents is. I see. So the Supernatural's protesting against being attacked by the creatures sent here to protect them. Their unrest is more of a priority than the crimes being committed against them in the first place? It's a matter of resources, Starla said in a tight voice. Resources, I repeated. And are these resources so vast and powerful that a council of Nephilim can't handle them? The council prefers to handle this matter internally. She cocked her head at me. I would have assumed he told you this already. He? I shook my head, confused, until understanding dawned like a bucket of ice water. Adric? I blurted. He's back on the council? Suddenly, Starla's comment the other night clicked into place. She'd said the majority of the council had voted me back into the SSF, including Adric. I'd been too much in shock at the time to understand. Adric has resumed his role in an attempt to fill the void his sister's departure has left behind, Starla said, and I scowled, still reeling. He hadn't told me. He hadn't even called since that night. Anyway, as I said, the council will be handling its own matters internally from here on. I thought the SSF was internal, I said. Her expression hardened. It would do you well to remember that we are bound by oath to the council's priorities, Starla said firmly. And right now, the council's priority is quieting these protests before they turn violent or bring human attention. I sat back, linking my fingers and reading between the lines of all of her political speak. I hadn't expected free rein or to be considered above the rules here, but letting the council handle Raguel was insane, even if that council now included Adric. Fine. The protests, I said, forcing thoughts of Raguel aside for the moment. Have you considered just telling people the truth? I asked. About Salafiel and the demons she summoned? Starla glanced at Rigo with an expression I couldn't decipher. If we do that, we risk fueling the unrest even further, she said. Not if you just explain she's really and truly gone, I said. The truth would go a long way with them. Truth, huh? Rigo said, eyes narrowing. Funny. Word on the street is a new Nephilim's in town, a female sent from another world to clean up the mistakes of their own kind. I glanced from him to Starla, understanding finally dawning. This was about my little shape-shifting stunt. They want to know who she is, Starla said pointedly. I could feel Milo's eyes on me, but I didn't dare look over. I had no idea what Rigo knew. Hopefully, nothing for sure. Still, I think if you explain the only Nephilim left are... Our job is to shut them up, not fan the flames, Rigo snapped. Our job is to serve the people, I countered. Our job is whatever the council says it is. Rigo's glare was a challenge. I sighed. There's another reason we don't want to quell the protests just yet, Starla said. Whatever it is, for the record, it's not good enough, I said, but Starla continued as if I hadn't spoken. We've received intel that these protests run a lot deeper than they look. A group of supernaturals has begun to organize, and our information suggests they're using the protests to recruit. Organize for what? Milo asked.
A coup, she said matter-of-factly. I blinked.
They want to take down the council?
I wasn't sure whether to be surprised or impressed.
These assholes won't get close enough, Rigo said darkly.
They want to upset the system, Starla said. That's all we know.
What does that have to do with us?
Milo asked, but I had a feeling I already knew. Starla's next words confirmed it. We know they're using the protest groups to recruit more to their cause. Your assignment is to make contact with the members and identify their leader.
You're going to silence them, I said quietly.
You're going to silence them.
And if I don't?
You would refuse? She asked, her raised brow daring me to challenge her. Even if their plan puts Adric at risk?
I'm not an assassin, I snapped.
For Pete's sake, Rigo muttered. Just get us the damned name, cadet.
I glared at him, refusing to answer. Starla went on.
I think we both know you wouldn't have agreed to this job if you weren't willing to do whatever it takes.
She gave me a pointed look, and I knew she was thinking about our other assignment, the one we wouldn't speak of in front of Rigo.
Ugh. Always with the double agent thing.
Fine.
We'll attend the protest, I said.
Good, Starla said. Observe. Notice anything out of place.
Whoa, word is the protests are glamored heavier than a Lady Gaga costume,
Milo pointed out. To humans. Starla gave me a shrewd look, much like the one she used the night she first recruited me, the one that said she knew all of my secrets, including the one about my being a shapeshifter, not just a griffin. Something the agency still didn't know about officially. Something they'd undoubtedly see as a threat if they found out I'd been the one to send Salafiel packing.
But you can see past what they want you to
see. She pinned Milo with a similar knowing look. And you can see through the
lies. My reputation precedes me, I see, Milo said, clearly not seeing this assignment for the distraction it was.
But I knew there was more to this than just rounding up disgruntled protesters or even uncovering a plot against the council, which wouldn't even be an issue if we stopped Raguel and came clean with the public. If I had to guess, this was Adric's doing, a way to keep me out of trouble. As if that were possible. And now Rigo looked pleased, which meant that however you sliced it, we'd been given the grunt work.
And what will Rigo do? I asked.
I'll do boss shit, he said, which is none of your business.
I rolled my eyes.
Boss shit? Really?
Rigo will be your handler, Starla explained. You'll report to him directly. After today, and for the time being, you won't come into the office, not while you're working this case. For all intents and purposes, you are undercover.
I stared at her, then him, trying to decide if this was the normal new guy treatment or something more like revenge from Rigo. But either way, I couldn't change it. I'd accepted the job, and this was the work. If I wanted to keep the title of Detective Hawkins, then I had to follow orders. With this, and with Jax, I still had to deliver a report on him, and I'd yet to begin collecting information. Other than the fact that he had bedroom eyes, a charming smile, and a rebellious streak that ran deeper and darker than any I'd ever seen. But apparently, solving murders and serving the people would have to wait. I had a civil rights movement to attend.
Any questions? Starla asked.
Only all my life choices, I muttered. Starla pretended not to hear me.
Rigo will report to me all pertinent case information.
She slid a phone across the desk.
Ooh, a burner, Milo whispered, grabbing for it.
We're like spies.
You'll use it to contact Rigo for information drops.
She glanced at me.
Once you've wrapped up the paperwork on your father's case, you can drop the file with processing on the first floor and then head out. There's a protest in front of Division 13 later this morning.
I'd recommend starting there to get in with the soups behind the movement.
Division 13, of course.
Roger that.
I pushed to my feet, gripping the file that felt way too thin considering its significance.
Good luck, Hawkins,
Starla called as I filed out.
Outside her office, I turned to Rego.
I need a desk.
Why? You're not staying.
I held up the file.
For this. I've got a workspace for you. Come on. I need to stop off in personnel to finish my transfer paperwork,
Milo said. I'll meet you downstairs, I told him, and then turned back to Rego. He led me back through the bullpen where a sea of desks left only a narrow maze of walking space between them. Instead of selecting one of the empty desks along the far wall, he led me through an unmarked door next to the restroom. Inside, fluorescent lighting washed the faded counters in a sort of beige vanilla. An old table and chair set in the center of the small room. A fridge and kitchenette lined one wall, and three rows of lockers lined the other.
You can work in here.
What the hell, Rego? This is the break room.
And you're only here for a short break.
My eyes narrowed. You're still an asshole.
You're still my subordinate. Watch your tone.
I glared at him, wondering if Starla would cut me a deal that would excuse me from murder charges. I'd do grunt work in exchange for strangling Rego without serving hard time in a heartbeat. Hell, I'd be a cleaner again if it meant the first crime scene I cleaned was my own. Rego pulled a scrap of paper from his pocket and held it out.
What's this?
I asked, grabbing it and noting the single phone number scrawled on it.
This is how you get a hold of me when you're ready to report. If I don't hear from you every 24 hours, I'll assume you're DIA and file the report accordingly. But don't worry, I'll investigate thoroughly for at least a day or two before closing the case and filing it beside your father's.
DIA meant dead in action, and didn't he look way too thrilled at that idea?
Ugh.
Rage rose up hot inside me, clogging my throat. With every inch of self-control I possessed, I remained motionless. One breath. Two. Then three. Against my primal instinct, I decided not to punch him. Instead, I only gave him the finger before he grinned and sauntered out. When he was gone, I exhaled and let out a string of curse words with it that would have made Gran proud. That asshole was a piece of work. I'd been a detective all of 5 minutes and already deserved Employee of the Month for not chopping his nuts off with a plastic butter knife someone had left out on the table. Ugh. Before I could figure out where to order myself the right plaque, the door opened again. I stilled at the sight of Raguel standing in the open doorway. He should have looked more normal or less intimidating underneath the cheap-ass fluorescence above him. But instead, he only looked more ethereal and dead-ass, capable of smiting me down where I stood with barely an effort. Nephilim didn't kill. They smited. Smote? I'd need to look that one up. I blinked, refocusing on the killer angel before me.
Jim, he said, stepping into the room, a move that suddenly had me feeling claustrophobic. I heard the good news. Welcome back to the agency.
Thanks. My throat felt hot, or maybe just constricted. I'd only barely recovered from ridding myself of one corrupt Nephilim. I hadn't mentally prepared to face another so soon.
How's your first day going?
His words reminded me of my chat with Starla, of being shot down when it came to going after Raguel directly. But I smiled haughtily as if my only purpose here was to play this cat-and-mouse game he'd just started.
So far so good. No one's tried suffocating me yet.
He laughed, as if my nod to his attempted murder was some inside joke between us.
Yes, I'm sure this visit is much more pleasant, he agreed.
His eyes sharpened.
Anything I can do to help?
Something about his offer made my skin crawl, but I refused to acknowledge the fear.
Nope. Just stopping off to get all my resources in a row so I can begin ferreting out the filth like I was hired to do.
He frowned. For a moment...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?